rock music corrupting the nation's youth. Are these rock bands doing the devil's work?
He's got a point, hasn't he, Mr. Maloney? I don't know many people who do play records backwards in order to decipher the words. Another one bites
the dust. I fancy a flirtation with the Black Arts here. I'll just buy a couple of albums on the off chance there's something subliminal on the play out of side two.
It's gonna be another hot, dry one in the Reno area. Here's some Judas Priest to help you get through the day.
Today's testimony really sums up what this case is all about, which is subliminal or hidden messages in the music of Judas Priest, specifically in the Stained Class album.
On December 23rd, 1985, Raymond Belknap took this shotgun, placed it under his chin, and pulled the trigger.
Better by you, better than me.
Their prosecuting attorneys said that they heard this thing in a song which they determined to be the phrase, do it.
Are there subliminal do it's on the Better By You, Better Than Me song?
Absolutely not.
Recording the call, brilliant. So it looks like that's good, and it's sounding good tonight. It's not jumping all over the place, which is excellent.
Now the subject matter for tonight is, it could be one in a series of podcasts on this subject.
Yes,
the subject being heavy metal on trial.
Yes,
which is always on trial in fucking America.
Always.
Yes, that mad, backward country.
Because Satan has power. Satan. If Satan will strike you down, motherfucker.
Cast thee out, Rob Halford.
Yeah. That rock and roll homosexual, he will be cast away by Satan.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't even know if Rob Halford was out when this happened, but that would have really got them excited, wouldn't it?
Oh, that would have really, they'd have been, you
know, homosexual influencing their kids to shoot themselves.
Oh god, can you imagine it? Those evangelists would be getting hard-ons just fucking thinking about it, beating the meat with excitement. I'm gonna talk about the devil tomorrow night. Oh god, yeah.
Well, when I was thinking about this, Dave, it did remind me of when I was about 12. I can't place my age exactly, but I think it was about that time. Because Judas Priest had a few chart hits in the early 80s.
Yeah.
If you think of Breaking the Law, United, Living After Midnight. And I was quite fascinated by Rob Halford and his leather. And he had the archetypal leather cap, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
That a lot of gay men wore.
Indeed.
And I remember seeing one in a shop in Stockport. Of all places, it was in the window. I thought, right, I'm gonna save up and my pocket money and I'm gonna buy that cap.
So innocently.
I was so innocent, yes.
Not realizing. Oh, was it actually like a bondage store?
It might have been.
When you walked in, there's like dildos everywhere.
Backstreet, yeah, it was just in the window,
right,
on its own.
Fantastic.
But I never managed to save up. I spent all my money on sweets.
In a way, I'm gladly.
Yeah.
you may well have been misrepresented terribly. Yeah. But the thing is with Rob, he presented himself in the what I would call the Al Pacino in cruising look, which is something of a giveaway.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, isn't it, that nobody really suspected. I mean, he's always been dead cool and open about it, really. And I think in the heavy metal world, it wasn't, you know, no one reacts like it's a big deal.
No. You know,
it's the sort of community that embraces outsiders and people that are different. So, you know, I don't think he's ever had any shit from the fans. And why should he? But for the benefit of the listeners, what we're going to be talking about tonight is what's known as the Judas Priest trial, which occurred in 1991. Judas Priest were actually on trial, the accusation being that they planted subliminal messages in their albums, or particularly one of the songs called Better By You, Better Than Me, which is actually a Spooky Tooth cover. It wasn't one of their originals.
Right.
So, yeah, the accusation was they planted these messages, which when you play them backwards, right?
Which is always the case.
Yeah.
When you play them backwards,
they apparently encouraged these two teenagers to kill themselves.
Mm.
Now, that is how preposterous this whole thing was, but it was very scary because it was very real. You know, I think when it was first mooted that they might be taken to court by the parents of these kids, they probably just laughed it off, you know, thinking, well, that's just ridiculous, you know, we haven't done anything and that won't happen. But the story, so I'll just read out something here about what happened. So it was one day in December 1985. There was two Judas Priest fans called Raymond Belknap, who was 18, and James Vance, who was 20. They had spent 6 hours drinking, smoking marijuana and listening to the heavy metal band's Stained Class album, after which each man took a shotgun and shot himself. Belknap died instantly, but Vance lived, sustaining serious injuries that left him disfigured. He died 3 years later. Before his death, Vance and his parents sued the band and their label at the time, CBS Records, for $6.2 million in damages. They claimed that Judas Priest had hidden subliminal messages like try suicide, do it, and let's be dead in their cover of Spooky Tooth's Better By You, Better Than Me, influencing Vance and Belknap to form a suicide pact. The suit went to trial in July 1990, and the prosecution played the song forward, backward, and sped up an attempt to prove the group had brainwashed these two young men into killing themselves. Do you know much about this trial?
I've seen a documentary about it.
Yeah, yeah, I remember watching it with you.
I've seen like the state of Vance's face as well. And thank you for the horror of sending me that picture, Lee. I mean, he's like Mr. Puff Pastry Man or something, his face.
Yeah, the sort of bottom half is a bit like Elmer Fudd. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't feel any sympathy whatsoever.
No, I don't. For him. I don't.
I hate the fucker for doing it.
I just think it's a pair of fucking plebs who decide to fucking blow their own brains out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just div. And yeah, what were they doing? Really trying to spin the disc backwards, spin the vinyl backwards to hear a message saying, "Why, aye, man, why don't you blow your brains out?" You know, as if.
It'd be more like, "Why, I man?" Because they're from the Midlands, Priest.
Oh yeah, they're not. Of course, they're from the Birmingham, aren't they? Oh Lord, blow your fucking brains out if you want to. Yeah. Oh yeah, brilliant bollocks, isn't it?
Absolutely. But the thing is, the original idea to sort of try and blame Priest was to say, "Oh yeah, their lyrics, they're all corrupt. They corrupt children. You know, they talk about death a lot. They talk about this, that and the other, all these negative things, and that's what's caused them to kill themselves." Yeah. But then they must have found out that that's protected under the First Amendment. You know, you can say anything.
Yeah, freedom of speech, isn't it?
In the name of art.
Mm.
And you can't get taken to court for it. You can't be blamed for it under the First Amendment. So they had to come up with an alternative idea, and the only thing that they could come up with was this idea of a subliminal message that was put on the record. Now, this is where the word subliminal, when we talk about The Exorcist, the Pazuzu bits, we often say that is a subliminal image. It's not actually a subliminal image, because a subliminal image is something that you don't notice or you can't see. Whereas those frames of Pazuzu, they're there, aren't they? They actually exist, and you see.
Even though they're fleeting, but they are there.
Yeah, so it's not a subliminal image. So how can you then play a record backwards to look for a subliminal image?
Yeah. And it is tosh.
You can't.
You can't. And it's tosh playing it backwards. You're only going to listen to it forwards, aren't you? You're not going to discover. How are you going to discover that? You're going to play the whole album, twisting it back. That's if it's on vinyl. You can't do that in CD anyway, can you?
No.
Back in the day, it would have been predominantly that. When that trial took place, it would have been predominantly CD.
It was 1990, so CD. Yeah. In CD. This happened in 85 when they did.
Oh, yeah, so it would have been vinyl, sorry, yes. So the thing is, would they have been spending all their time trying to play the fucking record backwards to hear some so-called message that's on there?
Unless, you know, I mean, there has been accusations of other bands putting backward messages on there, like the Beatles and Led Zepp, I think.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that when that was apparently discovered.
I don't know. I've tried doing it on the Zepp album to hear it, and you know, I don't know whether it's. I think it's an urban myth. I think it's just a.
It is. Total I mean, Queen have been accused of it. Another One Bites the Dust. If you play that backwards, it's apparently says it's fun to smoke marijuana. And the one that Led Zepp apparently have put on. I think Stairway to Heaven, and they haven't. Put it on, but this was the accusation, was something about here's to my sweet Satan.
Yes, yeah, to Satan, isn't it? Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, unless they actually put some instructions on the sleeve notes to play it backwards at this particular point, you're never going to ever find these things that have apparently been so deeply hidden that they're actually subliminal.
I just don't think that they would go to that kind of length to try and make that heard. I think they're far too busy just having a damn good time, hedonistic time, and like doing their best to stay on straight enough, like off the drugs and the booze to actually produce the records to the best.
And why would you want to kill your own fans as well?
Well, exactly. They are. Yeah, let's get rid of some of our revenue stream. Yeah, it's a clever idea, isn't it? As if anyone's going to do that. It's preposterous. These are the people that spend their money on our stuff. Let's kill them.
But the bit that the prosecution apparently... I mean, I don't think this was ever alleged by James Vance, who survived. I don't really know this part of the story about how being such a big fan of Judas Priest that he then turned on them and said, oh, yeah, it was them that made me try to kill myself.
Yeah.
You know, but he apparently did say something about their influence on his decision. OK, let's just ignore the fact that he was drinking and taking drugs, you know, six hours leading up to that. It was obviously when he was listening to Priest. But you know, he never actually said, oh, I was playing the records backwards and this is what I heard. So that it was basically the prosecution that had to go and start playing Priest's albums backwards and try and find stuff, right? And honestly, if you actually hear what they found, it is so utterly shit. You know, the only thing they could find was this alleged do it, which is so low in the mix of the clip that they show. You can't hear it. You cannot decipher do it. You know, a lot of the jury afterwards said, I heard nothing. The judge at the end of the day said he couldn't hear anything. And that was the best they had. So Rob Halford very cleverly thought, well, to counter this, let's play some of our own records backwards and see if we can find these accidental messages.
Yeah.
So he plays in court, and it's a really good bit if you watch the documentary, where he plays this bit from one of their songs, and then he says, that's it forwards, this is it backwards. And you can hear very clearly this message when it's played backwards, which is, she asked for a peppermint, she asked me to get one. Right. So they managed to find these much more coherent sentences. That basically proved that anything that was alleged was on there, there accidentally. Even the phrase do it doesn't mean anything, does it? Do what?
No. Do you know what? I think the great thing is nowadays with the modern technology, you can do stuff like that. You can hear yourself speaking backwards on things.
Yeah.
And it does come up with some very random kind of quite humorous things, because we were doing it. George and I were doing it not so long ago with something, and I can't quite remember what it was, but we were mucking about with some of the little tech that they have through the phones these days. And we were doing exactly that. And it is, it will come up occasionally with some, just some random words or some random ideas. But you are sort of half interpreting them yourself as well.
Yeah.
You know?
If you're looking for it, you might hear it.
And that's purely what it's about, because to think that these bloody rock stars are going to spend hours coming up with some crypto idea that they're going to run backwards because they're going to put a certain set of words together, and they're just not going to do it. It's just not going to do, because well, I mean, and then hide it so well
and make it so
exactly,
you know, vague,
so obscure, and not even offer a clue that he's there.
Why don't you just play it forwards?
Exactly. And then when they do actually listen to it, even though they don't give any clues for it whatsoever, or drop hints that it might be there, when they've done that, the message says, go kill yourself. So it would actually take you out of the revenue stream on our fan base. So the whole thing doesn't make any sense whatsoever. No. Utterly. How did it get caught? I don't believe it would have. I have to say that.
It's in America, isn't it? I mean, Ozzy's had this before with his song Suicide Solution, that he's been blamed on kids' suicide. And it's never got anywhere, you know, because I think that probably got chucked out under the First Amendment, you know.
Mm.
But to actually sort of blame it on this innocent band and drag them through the court. And they were shitting themselves, to be honest. You know, they suddenly found themselves in this completely alien environment where heavy metal is treated like it is satanic.
Mm.
You know, they think all heavy metal same. Now, Priest have never, ever been a satanic band at all, or never actually sung about the devil and things like that. But they get lumped in with it, don't they? Especially when there's Christian evangelists and this sanctimonious atmosphere, that makes it a very alien environment.
And you know, the other side of it is, you know, there are bands that expose themselves to this idea of being like dark forces. Let's take, for example, someone like Alice Cooper, who was very playful and everything, but it's all kind of pretend satanic and demonic and everything. I mean, what does Alice Cooper do in his spare time? He goes and plays golf with a load of fucking showbiz types. He's totally the most kind of mainstream guy away from being Alice Cooper. It was a band originally, wasn't it, called Alice Cooper, and then he took on the moniker, this idea of being Alice Cooper. But the reality is that Alice Cooper himself is, although he loves it all, he loves the idea of the whole old school horror and horror in general. I mean, you think he loves all that, but he's very aware it's a kind of grand guignol, isn't it? It's pantomime. It's pantomime. Well,
exactly.
And that's really what a lot of most heavy metal stuff, even the ones that do the satanic stuff, that's all part of it, isn't it?
It's just an image to hang your hat on or to sing about. It's not, I mean, the band that it's been leveled against is Slayer. Now, Slayer wrote one of the most satanic albums ever, right? And they've wrote a few. But they don't believe in it.
Of course not. I mean,
but yeah, Black Sabbath had it. You know, Black Sabbath, of course.
I was going to say Sabbath were brilliant
at this.
They were brilliant at marketing themselves in that way, you know, as this band. But they were never about devil worship. They were about the dark forces of nature and of life. A lot of the time, kind of like political, the dark forces of the world,
War pigs and stuff.
So I think it was very clever. They presented themselves brilliantly, Sabbath.
Geezer, who wrote most of the lyrics, was into the
occult.
Yeah, he's a brilliant songwriter.
Totally. And, you know, another brilliant songwriter, Mick Jagger. Mick Jagger wrote Sympathy for the Devil, didn't he? Mm. Him and Keith, but Mick wrote all the words. And the words are brilliant, Sympathy for the Devil. You don't go around saying Mick Jagger's a fucking Satanist, do you? Really? Yeah. Well, maybe some people doing the fucking...
Well, that's how the certain parts of American society interpret these things. They just take it very, very literally. What I think helped was Judas Priest actually going into court every day. They turned up on time. They didn't fit the image of a heavy metal band as the people around that area and the jurors maybe thought. You know, the Rob Halford spoke very eloquently.
Of course he did.
On the stand. You know, I think that went a long way in terms of changing the perception.
Did Halford go at this? All right, I've just got to say, I've changed my lawyer, okay? I hope you don't mind, Your Honour. I've got a great mate of mine coming in to represent me, Mr. David Coverdale. Coverdale, hello, Your Honour. I am here to represent Mr. Halford and my good friends, the Judas Priest. And I have to say right away that this case is a sham, and everything about it is a sham. For I, David Coverdale, tell you right now that nobody in the world of heavy metal and heavy rock music is a Satanist. It is purely theatre. Theatre, sir. That is it, and nothing else.
Well said that, David. Thank you very much, mate.
Sorry, I had a little fantasy there for a minute.
He always, have you seen Rob Halford during the trial? He's the absolute image of Tim Brooks Taylor. You know, and that sort of... That adds to the high farce of the situation.
Oh, brilliant. That is brilliant. Yeah.
When you see the documentary, you feel so sorry for Priest, because there's these clips of them, you know, just talking about their background, you know, all from working class backgrounds. They grew up in the Midlands, in and around the steel industry. And they were so magnanimous in the fact that they never hated the parents of these kids, even though the parents were blaming them, they had a lot of sympathy with them. And Rob Halford said, you know, I would just love to have been able to just go for a coffee with the mother of, and just tell her, you know, I'm really sorry that you're for the loss of your son. And they never criticized the guy who was accusing them, the one that survived, James Vance, because they saw them as fans, because they were really big Judas Priest fans.
I find it very annoying as well. I've been a bit of a musician myself and a keen songwriter and things, is that for anyone to sort of take hold of what you know, your little bit of art, your bit of creativity, and then twist it into something else, or feel that because somebody has been affected by it, that somehow you are to blame, you know?
Yeah.
Look how it happened. It, you know, we were talking about Sabbath, how it happened to Sabbath with Paranoid. When that nurse killed herself, didn't she? And Paranoid was on the record player or something. And I remember in the interview with Tony Iommi, and he was saying about it. He says, well, it's not our... He said, we were devastated to hear that, but it's not our fault. That is not the way, you know. And when you've got something that's become successful and it goes out to thousands of ears, millions of ears, somebody... who is going to be emotionally disturbed or suffering from some form of mental health issue is going to get hold of that and twist that piece of music into something for themselves in a very sad way, really. And I have to say, Lee, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day who was telling me that a very young person, let's put it that way, I don't know if it was a young man or a young woman, who took their life, had A Sleep by the Smiths as their song at the funeral. And the big thing, the insistence was, they left a note saying, I want you to listen to this song. They insisted on playing it in the funeral ceremony, you know.
Right, which song was it, you know?
Asleep.
Yeah.
Right. So how on earth would you equate, you can't put that on the hands of Morrissey for writing a beautiful, touching song about loneliness. You know,
no.
I don't want to let me sleep. I don't want to wake up alone anymore.
See, to sleep. It's a really properly depressing one, that. But it is a beautiful songwriting.
It is a beautiful songwriting. And of course, but there's probably been many people who in some way or another have possibly hurt themselves or thought about hurting themselves listening to a Smiths record. But there's probably been millions of people who have cured themselves from listening to millions of Smith's records without a shadow of a doubt.
That's huge comfort in music. Yeah,
of course it is. It's huge,
especially if you relate to the lyrics. You know, even though those lyrics are sad and, you know, melancholic.
Of course,
you know, it's about relating to it and realizing you're not alone, and somebody who's singing about this understands how you feel.
I mean, I've written a sort of, probably the song that I wrote that most people who know me knows is a song called Nothing Seems to Change. So I'm writing a song about that. About feeling that things changed, and and wanting something better with my life, someone could get hold of that and think, God, I feel like that, and then top themselves. It's ludicrous. Yeah. Ludicrous.
Maybe, I don't know much about that paranoid instance. Were you saying that that song was played before she killed herself?
It was on a Hard Talk interview, if you guys, listeners, want to see it.
Is this when Iommi was on it?
Yeah, the Iommi one. That
dickhead.
Interviewer.
I fucking hated him.
I did.
That I thought Iommi should have got up and walked out, the sort of shit he was throwing at
him. To be fair on Tony, you think he knew what it was. The Hard Talk on BBC 24 is exactly that.
Yeah.
It's basically...
But by somebody who's completely misinformed and doesn't know anything.
Well, of course. I mean, they're not going to be... That kind of journalist is not going to really understand the muses and the interests and the sound of Black Sabbath, are they? They're just not. I mean, you're quite right, really. It's the wrong people to be interviewing Tony Iommi, but there you go.
He did handle himself well, I thought.
I thought he handled himself really because he's the most wonderfully relaxed, stable human being you could ever wish to hear on the television. Yeah. Tony.
I mean, my interpretation of somebody listening to a song and then killing themselves or killing themselves whilst it's playing would probably be because they love that song so much.
Yeah.
That's what they want to hear before they die, or this song has suddenly made me want to kill myself.
And that's why I'm using that example of the Smiths and Asleep, because that is a very, very absolute example of someone saying, this is how I feel, this song speaks volumes of how I feel, and I want you to play it, and I want you to listen to it, this is my wish, because this is how I feel. That is literal, isn't it? That is kind of a literal way of saying.
Yeah.
Now, in the case of Judas Priest, these two thought, our life's shit, but let's go out on a bang, let's listen to a load of Judas Priest, drink a load of crap, and then blow our brains out. Because we just want to have one night together, listening to our favourite band, you know. Probably it has nothing to do with there's anything in the music itself.
The other thing that came out of the trial, Dave, and this is where, you know, it makes you even more angry that this ever got to trial, is that Priest's lawyers, you know, went in on the family and they exposed how dysfunctional these families were where these kids grew up. These kids had been in trouble since they were very young. They were involved in fights, antisocial behaviour throughout their childhood and in the teenage years, the felonies, you know, minor crimes. Nothing too extreme, but in America, and particularly in certain sections of America, particularly the Christians, they don't know how to handle teenage rebellion. They think that their kids are possessed. All these influences are turning them evil. They don't understand it's a phase that most kids go out of. And if you try to stop them doing the things, you know, listening to the music they want to do or hanging out with mates, and if you try and stop them and suppress that, it's just going to get worse.
Yeah, it's all tied in together. You know, the American model of life and living doesn't work, does it? It's absolutely claptrap. And, you know, the overt sort of capitalism that they've embraced don't work. Their form of evangelistic religion doesn't work. It's a mess. It's a fucking mess. The great thing, you know, I listen to a few, like America. I listened to one in particular American podcast. I hadn't been listening to it for a while, but I've been kind of enjoying listening to it again. These three guys in, it's called Deep Fat Fried, and they're actually very sort of left wing for like Americans, but they really expose the kind of redneck culture and places like Florida, where all sorts of crazy shit seems to happen in Florida. And they're always exposing like crime, like gun crime. It's a mess, you know? Mm. And I don't want to speak at all about this to any length with this situation in Nottingham, which was just horrendous. And it just makes, I was so sad, you know, as you have, you know, you've got a child that's getting closer and closer to that kind of university age where they're going to go off probably and do their own thing, and you're going to be worried about them a little bit and one thing or another. I mean, God, that was just horrible. You know, it's just the most horrendous thing. But that is a really rare and random thing to happen in Britain. Now, in America, that happens much more frequently. And it's because, see, that clown in fucking Nottingham, you know, whatever was wrong with him, what his mental health issues, whatever. And perhaps I shouldn't use the word clown, but I feel like calling it because of what he's done. Terrible thing that he's done. A really fucking dreadful thing that he's done. Two young people with their whole lives ahead of them and some poor guy who's looking forward to his retirement. Fucking bastard. I'm sorry. Bastard.
Don't apologise.
So he is a clown. He's a fucking evil fucking clown. But if he had a gun, not a knife, if he had a gun that was loaded, ammunition, think of the carnage he could have caused. And the, why do the American... I mean, this crime in itself, this incident with the two boys, not, well, this court case, let's call it that, because the only crime was a human crime, human tragedy, really. So it's certainly not Judas Priest causing any fucking crime. The only crime there was boys of that age being able to have access to a fucking shotgun and guns to blow their fucking brains out. You know, what the fuck is that all about?
I mean, we've obviously view America differently and certain parts of America differently than they do. They ignore all that. They ignore all the huge gun culture and the beating the kids up and forcing them to go to church and treating them like they're fucking mentally ill because they listen to metal. You know, these kids, they both had stepdads who, one of them beat the shit out of James Vance, who was the one that survived. He was a drinker, he had a gambling problem, he beat his wife up as well, which was James Vance's mother. Now, because he's recovered from that, it's suddenly nothing to do with it. Oh, no, well, he goes to AA now and he's not beat me up for ages. But this James would have witnessed that when he's younger.
Yeah, of course. This, the damage is done.
There's loads of, like, school reports where he's seen psychiatrists and they've come out that the kid hated his life. He hated himself. He was deeply unhappy. And he was asked, what thing do you enjoy the most? And it was doing drugs. You can't blame him, really, growing up in that environment. But his mother was trying to present him like, oh, he was a good-natured boy and we used to go on picnics and do family things. Nothing could be further than the truth. He fucking hated his mum and she hated him.
Yeah.
But this lie that they just
well, it's a perpetuation.
Told to blame.
You do get that in this country as well, though, to an extent. I've seen it on the news recently where there's been a couple of, like, things that have taken place. I don't want to go into any details or any of the cases, but I've seen, like, mugshots of these, like, 17-year-old kids from this housing estate, and they were saying, he was the sweetest kid. He was this, that, the other.
He lit up the room.
And he looks like an absolute fucking cunt. And you kind of know. Yeah. You know that he's up to no good, and then it transpires that the journalist tells you a little bit more information. It turns out they've been in and out of fucking trouble all their lives. You know they're a bunch of bastards, but the parents, all parents are always going to say, aren't they, about their kids being wonderful?
Yeah.
They're just going to do it. But it's even more so, because also in those perpetuated environments, it's always repeating itself. Abuse is always repeating itself down the chain, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's from one generation, one family to another, because they know no better. They're so ill-educated. And it is very easy to take the piss out, like they do a lot in this Deep Fat Fried. And you understand why they do it, because it's very frustrating. I'm a good old boy. They're always doing these, like, good old boy impressions. I don't understand what that's all about, because I'm a good old boy.
This is it. The system in America is basically, you can do as many evil things as you can, but as long as you repent and believe in Jesus, then you're a good person. That's what is very prevalent in this.
Yeah, well, that's,
you know, these failed parents who are trying to blame a band, but because they go to church every day, that they're somehow exonerated from it all and nothing to blame, and this is God's plan. And
well, for me, you know, God, you know, organized religion and the way they sort of throw around God and Jesus and all this, and say your Hail Marys and one thing and another, and everything will be forgiven. They're the fucking Satanists. They're the bastards. They truly are. Because I'm sure the real Jesus Christ, who, you know, run around Jerusalem as a sort of born again Jew, saying I've had a revelation here. What I've been taught as a
view of the Old Testament. I think it's a lot of bollocks. This is what I think, and I'm the son of. Oh, by the way, I'm the son of God. By the way, I'm the son of God, and this is the way we should think about it now. Even though that the Romans and the Jews are going to conspire against me and stick me up on a cross and kill me, you know, I don't care because I'm going to come back to life and everything's going to be groovy. And I'm basically a bit of a communist. I believe like people should have a bit of everything. And those bastards who are fiddling with the money and the money, you know, in there, they're all too greedy and they should share it out a bit and all this. So all these messages, and they've all been sort of manipulated and twisted and turned around over the years by shifty fucking human beings. And yeah. I've been, mate, listen, forget the evangelists in bloody the south, deep south of America. Honestly, they're small fry when it comes to the, yeah, they've got plenty of money and they've got TV stations. They've got all sorts going on. Lots of fiddles going on there. Mm. But it's nothing compared to the old Catholics. You want to fucking, I've been in it. You want to go into the Vatican City in Rome, mate. Get inside that little world of its own. Because it is a little country of its own, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Smallest country.
If you haven't been, I would recommend to anybody, yeah, anybody from the United States listening or anybody across Europe, if you haven't been, go and have a look around it. See what you think. See the ostentation of the place. See the wealth. See the hoarded things that are in there. Things that have been taken from different places. Because the gateway, if you like, the museum towards the Sistine Chapel before you get there is littered, literally littered with possessions that the Catholic Church have managed to get their hands on. Oh, yes. All these goodies. And then you get into the Sistine Chapel and it's this remarkable little chapel with these incredible paintings. Yes, it is fundamentally amazing. No doubt about that. That is one man's incredible work that Michelangelo did there in the Sistine Chapel. Wonderful. But I was overwhelmed with the idea of hoarded wealth when I was in the Vatican City. Go into St. Peter's Cathedral and see that. And it's basically saying, we are so powerful and we control you all with our power. And Rome is full of that. There's a church in Rome that you go into, right? It might have been Rome, it might have been in Venice, so forgive me. But I think it was Rome when I went to Rome. You walk into it, right? And all the pews of the church face this huge mural on the wall. And the mural is this cloud held up by these cherubs. And on it is this this picture of a pope, one of the popes from the past, like he's in heaven. But he's just pointing fiercely at the parishioners like that. With this fierce look on his face, as if to say, don't you fucking dare. Don't you fucking dare. It's amazingly. I would honestly, people, go and check it out.
You have to pay to get in.
It's mind brainwashing. Oh, yeah, you have to pay to get in.
Oh, of course.
You get served by all these monks, you know, these monks jibbing about all over the place, getting the cash in there for the Catholic Church. The money, pal. The money. I know. And also the devil. Do you want to talk about Satan and the devil? It's such an interesting subject. And this is the thing that these fucking weirdo fucking evangelists don't understand. It's an interesting subject. It's an exciting subject to talk about. It doesn't mean that you believe. It doesn't mean that you're going to cause havoc and hurt somebody. On the contrary, you're not.
No, and there's studies that say that it's cathartic. You know, it makes people listening to heavy metal makes. I mean, I don't like the term heavy metal. It's such an umbrella term because there's about 50 different genres. And
I agree.
You know, some couldn't be less like the other if they tried, you know.
Yes.
But, okay, loud guitar, you know, whatever, maybe that characterises it. But if you get some really heavy music, really aggressive music with maybe aggressive lyrics and that, that is a release for people. So they don't become aggressive in real life because they have that where the get the aggression out. It's a cathartic process.
Yeah.
And that's why it's healthy.
Yeah, yeah.
But people wouldn't necessarily know that if they just saw them at face value. They'd think that they were causing people to become aggressive.
Yes.
Well, no, it's just the opposite.
It's totally the opposite.
People are very chilled out.
They are. They're very passive. And they're very and they're gentle. I was blown away, you know, with the people. And the variety of people from the heavy metal scene, which was really interesting. I mean, this guy, Tim, and I became really pally with Tim doing the heavy metal night at the club, because it was when the club changed, you know, so we were open to different things. And I was just left to it, running it, you know, on whatever it was, a Thursday or Friday night. And I just really enjoyed it. And Tim, who was, he had like a transsexual girlfriend, and he was very alternative in look, and they were, but they were the nicest people, you know, to get on.
Yeah.
And we were Facebook friends and one thing another. And we were going to, he was always talking to me about doing a different night, another night. We were in conversation about doing another night together. I thought, well, he seems like such a sound lad. And it was, I think it was like putting on bands, you know, another night. There was a live night. I thought, well, this will be great. And the owners of the club, they'll be into this as well. Wonderful. I would have, you know, I can't remember what happened. And it might have not been long before I actually left to come and live here. So that's possibly why it didn't happen, which is a shame, but just one of those things. But I would have jumped at it, you know, if it had happened. And I have to say, again, one of the nicest, most chilled nights that I've ever had at the Brick House when I was running the Brick House. And I couldn't always say that, you know, some nights were tricky.
No.
I have to say, though, that another sort of group was like, that probably had a reputation of probably being a bit violent, is a kind of like two-tone sort of mod stroke scar kind of thing. You'd think, oh, they could be a bit risky, you know, could get a bit leery. Couldn't be different, couldn't have been further from the truth. They were so nice, even though it was a bunch of like bloody middle-aged blokes, big middle-aged blokes, all boozed up. So lovely, just loving the music, having a great time, because it's all about the passion in it. If you've got the passion for the music, you're not interested in anything else. You're not interested in stoking someone's face in.
I mean, you think about where the trouble used to be in the nightclubs in Manchester. Absolutely. It was all the ones that played the Stock Aitken and Waterman.
It sure was.
Wasn't it?
Of course it was. It was. It was the shirt and tie clubs where the fights were. That's where the blood poured out of people on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
Shirt and tie clubs, your fucking Applejacks and fucking shit.
Brannigans,
exactly. Playing Stock Aitken and Waterman and full of spivvy blokes and horrible bloody fishnet girls, you know, with big haircuts. It's bullshit. Absolute fucking
this
bullshit.
Is why I find it so infuriating when metal is so mischaracterized, because
very maligned. But isn't it the case, Lee, though, isn't it the case that like mainstream media or mainstream politics demonizes, and that's quite a good term actually for what we've been talking about tonight, but they do demonize things that they fucking don't understand.
No.
They've been doing it for years with pop culture and with any culture, for example. They just shit all over it without really looking into it or having any understanding of it whatsoever. And it tends to come from right-wing circles. I don't get political with leftist sort of ideas, but the reality is these evangelists, they're all right-wingers. They're all Republicans. If they're not Republicans, they're like deep south fucking Democrats, which are like as right-wing as Republicans. They are really, really right-wing. Pretty racist, let's be honest. Pretty bloody racist. Still wishing that it was segregation, right?
Yeah.
And
well, they don't like anyone unless they're like them.
They don't like anybody like them. Totally. Totally. I mean, that Louis Theroux about all the people with AIDS going to burn in hell. You remember that episode? That
The Westboro Baptist Church.
The Westboro Baptists. I mean, how disgusting were they?
Just hated everyone, didn't they?
In a way, I suppose, they hated everybody, so, you know.
Yeah, well, they were all for equality.
Yes, that's it. They hated everybody equally. But
that's what I forgot to say, Dave, about this trial, is that Rob Halford has since commented that he felt that the families were railroaded a little bit into this lawsuit because they seemed to be infiltrated by these right-wing evangelical groups, you know, who were telling them that it was Judas Priest, because they obviously thought they could gain something from it. I mean, the 80s in America, there used to be this, what were they called? PMRC. It was actually run by Tipper Gore, who's Al Gore's.
Yes, I remember she's involved in it.
And the reality is,
they were like burning records and also Parents Music Resource Centre, they were called PMRC.
See,
and they were constantly going after bands like bloody Twisted Sister and Motley Crue and AC/DC and Madonna, even Cyndi Lauper, I think, was another one. Prince, you know, it was just ridiculous. They got so much bloody publicity and they were allowed to speak at things. You know, they had so much influence.
I know. I think as well, mate, Tipper Gore, you know, Al Gore's missus, she shouldn't really be regarded as particularly right-wing because Al Gore was a Democrat. But the reality was, you know, Clinton and Gore, and she might have been more right-wing and leaning anyway than her husband. You know, this was her little sideline while he was off trying to save the world because he was into, like, all the climate change stuff, which is... Which he hasn't done very well with. But the reality is their version, the Democrats' version, especially I think in the 80s, looking at it, of what being a moderate party is compared to it is in Britain, Al Gore would be a Tory without doubt.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a Gore. Because what people don't realise, a lot of people don't realise in Britain, is that the Democratic Party in Britain is not like the Labour Party here. The Democratic Party is a pretty forceful right-wing party. It's just that the Republicans are fucking extremely right-wing. This is the thing. And the Southern Democrats in America, they are like Republicans anyway. They are very, it's a kind of strange anomaly. They are very right-wing, you know. So it's a weird one. And they are very straight-laced as well. And narrow-minded, even if politically they're not even particularly right wing. There's this narrow-mindedness in mainstream society that doesn't get it. Just doesn't get it. Yeah. Let your kids express themselves, you know.
Yeah. I think that was a big part of the problem, them not allowing their kids to be teenagers and just constantly being on the case all the time and stopping that aspect. You know, that's what teenagers do. They rebel. They hate their parents for a bit, you know, but just let them go through that phase and everything will be all right.
Yeah, you're bringing, it's incredible, isn't it? You're bringing Judas Priest to account in a court case, but not the parents of these two fucking lads who got pissed together listening to Judas Priest with a shotgun. What about neglect of care by parents? Should they have been in court?
Yeah, I mean, the defence did a very good job of exposing that, how awful these parents were and what an unhappy home life it was for the kids. I think the jury got that and the judge. Now, I think just to wrap it up, Dave, because we're nearly at the end, I think. I did think I mentioned it before that James Vance, who survived the attack.
Yes.
The attack. He survived his own suicide attempt. He subsequently... died about 3 years after the trial.
Yeah.
He overdosed on medication.
Did he?
Now, reading between the lines, that was another suicide.
Yes.
Attempt there. I don't know what they blame that time. They seemed to be pretty quiet about that then.
Yeah, they didn't take it back to court, did they? Satanic rites of Def Leppard or something. You know, what the fuck? It's ludicrous, isn't it? Absolutely ludicrous. I'm sorry. And, you know, feel for the lad in one way, because it's a cycle of abuse. But,
yeah,
I mean, look at the state of him. Any listeners there get a chance to see the poor sod's face, you know, after he'd attempted to kill himself the first time. I mean, the whole thing was a shameful exercise. And the most shameful part of all of it was the ridiculous nature of the clawing press, media, vulture lawyers, half-baked politicians' wives, despicable, bloody, evangelical soothsayers and fucking snake oil salesmen that were all involved to attack a truly innocent thing, which is good old rock and roll. That's it.
Well summed up, Dave.
Thanks, mate.
thank you for listening, listeners. Let us know what you think. If you do get chance and you feel the inclination, then please rate us on Apple iTunes. And we will be back soon with another pod. We don't know which topic we'll be discussing then. It'll be just as random as this one, I imagine.
What we're going to do, we're going to do a few more. The satanic.
We could do, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, there's always other angles. You're always good with it. Yeah. You've always got an angle on it.
Yeah, so look out for Metal on Trial Part 2. Good night, Dave. Good night, listeners.
Good night, listeners. Now I've got to go out in the streets and down the shore. Tell the world that my